You're listening to Pod for Ham, a podcast from The Incomparable that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time through the original Broadway cast recording. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track. Visit us on the web at pod4ham.com or follow us on Twitter at pod4ham.
You haven't met him yet, you haven't had the chance, cause he's been kicking ass as the ambassador to France. But someone's gotta keep the American promise. You simply must meet Thomas. Thomas!
Welcome to Pod for Ham, the weekly podcast where a rotating panel of guests discuss Hamilton track by track. I'm Deb Stanish, your host for this week's discussion of What Did I Miss? And joining me on the rotating stage of Skype, not the rotating stage of the Richard Rogers Theater, is Casey Barber.
Hello.
And Michael B. Johnson.
Hello.
Well, I think we really lucked out with getting this song because we are charged with discussing the song that opens Act Two, where we're put on notice that Alexander's brilliant and meteor rise in both personal and political status might be hitting a few bumps in the road. So there's lots to discuss in this song, and there's lots of amazing little things that are buried deep, deep, deep within the lyrics and the musical style. So I want to talk a little bit about, because you both are extremely fortunate and that you have seen this performed with David Diggs. So I'd like to get a little perspective. I have not. I'm just going to be very honest with you. My tickets aren't until later. So I've not had the opportunity to see David in this role. So I'd like to get a little bit of that perspective from both of you on what it's like to see this performed, this energetic song performed live. Casey, I think you probably have seen it most recently, haven't you?
Oh, boy. Well, you're going to really hate me because I have seen it twice. And both times with David.
Yeah.
And I, you know, anyone who listens to the soundtrack is going to be enamored of this song. But there is just an intense charisma that he brings to the role. And the first time we saw it, obviously, he was perfection. And then the second time we saw it, he had even played that up and brought the crowd vibe, as it were, to the role a little more and fed off of that and hammed it up. And obviously, this is my favorite song on the entire soundtrack, and David is my favorite performer.
So this is really right up your alley to be asked to discuss this song tonight.
It is.
So, Michael, when did you get the opportunity to see this song perform live?
Oh, we saw it in February.
Okay. And what was your expectations going in after listening to the cast album? Because I know you had mentioned in email that you started listening to the cast album pretty early on and, you know, were gifted tickets before they became impossible to get. So what was your expectations after listening to the soundtrack and then going and seeing it live?
Well, I had a bunch of folks I work with had seen it, and they had different suggestions. John Lasseter was like, don't listen to the soundtrack at all. I was like, too late. And he's like, listen to it afterwards. And then Brad Bird had seen it and was it was singing the songs. And so I was super excited. But part of what was interesting to see it live was one of the things that was so confusing initially listening to the album was I didn't understand about the double casting. Mm-hmm. And so, and this one especially, Lafayette to Jefferson are such different characters, even though clearly the same level of talent is involved. So my point is that this is the first time when you're seeing it live where you start to see their other roles, mm-hmm. right? You see Lafayette be Jefferson, and you see Hercules Mulligan be Madison. Mm-hmm. And so that was a little, it's one thing to know it. It's another thing to kind of see it.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I don't know if either of you had a chance to read the Hamilton book that Lin-Manuel put out with sort of all the wonderful annotations, as well as some wonderful essays about the process of creating this. But he does a really amazing essay about Oak and David creating these two roles, and how it was only these two people, these two performers at that time that could have done that. So Michael, you really did see a significant shift, because the one thing in the essay that stood out to me is Oak, who plays Madison and Hercules Mulligan, is a big guy. He is, you know, he's sort of physically, you know, burly, and he says he actually manages, you almost see him shrink into himself to portray Madison, who is a more sickly character. So did you experience that shift in him becoming this new persona?
Well, it was interesting. That's the one actor who was not there the night we went.
Oh, okay.
And so it was his understudy. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because I thought about that, because his understudy was nowhere near as physically imposing as the other actor was. And I honestly, like, Madison is far and away the sort of the most confusing character for me, because he's kind of cut out. It's hard to understand Madison. I read the Chernow book once I got into this, and then I went back and read a biography of Jefferson as well. And one of the struggles on this is that the Hamilton Madison thing is a really interesting long story. They're like weird twins of each other in some way, and so that isn't really explained, and so you never kind of understand the whole thing of Madison there kind of sickly, and they make references to that, and I don't know, it's like it was a thing that was really present in the musical that I had not really gotten from the books. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It's
that
true. Sense, we yeah. never get a Madison showcase song where he can tell his own story, as it were, in this. Everyone ends up overshadowing him in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, especially because Hercules Mulligan, who's not a super historically important figure, let's just say. I mean, he's a real person and he did real and important things, but
he just happens to have a really great name.
Exactly. But Madison is a huge character in American history, and in the musical, he's frankly of the two roles played by the given actor, it's the much less interesting one, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all True. Of the interesting stuff between Madison and Hamilton happened between Act 1 and Act 2. Like, you don't see that. You don't get to the point where you've gone from, you know, writing all the essays to being mortal enemies,
exactly.
So to speak. It's all stuff that's kind of left on the table that we don't get to see. Well, let's talk a little bit about David Diggs imbibing the role of Jefferson, because he has two – it's interesting to me that – the two most vibrant characters in just sort of their flashiness and flamboyance, we, you know, with Lafayette and the super fast French rap. And then we have the very sort of prince-esque Jefferson in this role are portrayed by this one person. How do you think the shift in the musical style and the tone was so interesting to me in listening to this? Because this song actually harkens back to a much more traditional Broadway style, with a little bit of swing, a little bit of jazz. It sets an interesting tone for the character, and it sets an interesting tone for Act Two. So was that jarring in seeing that shift live? Like, how did the audience react to that? Because it is something that we had not seen up until that point.
They make a point in the book of talking about the fact that in this book, I'm talking about the one that they wrote about the musical.
The Hamilton.
Talking about how – yeah, the Hamilton.
I love the Hamilton. Exactly. Yeah, so I didn't want to say that, but that's what everybody calls it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But the point they were making was just the fact that Thomas Jefferson was so much older than – you know, Madison and Burr and Hamilton, and so they wanted him to be sort of an older musical style and sort of represent it that way, which I thought it was great. As an opening of the second act, I thought it just pulled you right in.
Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to figure out how the audience was reacting specifically, because by the time I saw it, I think a lot of us had obsessively listened to the soundtrack and knew it was coming on. Mm-hmm. But even when I was first listening to the soundtrack, it always bothered me that they were discussing it as a hip hop musical, because it's obviously so much more than that. And we already heard so many musical styles in the first act, but the first act is so propulsive for the most part. And then you have the break, the intermission, and then you come back to this song, which is really nothing like anything you heard in the first act. And that really does set the tone for this character, this guy that you haven't met him yet. And he is really going to be someone to be reckoned with on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be anachronistic. Anachronistic? Yes.
Yes.
And it's funny because jazz was considered to be such a revolutionary thing in and of itself when it was introduced. But here it's taken as a throwback.
Now, you said that you had read, Michael, you had said that you had read a biography of Jefferson. And mm-hmm. And I've read a couple. There's a lot of things that are discussed about Jefferson. A lot of, obviously we're going to talk about Sally Hemings and his place in American history. But he was not always the smoothest of characters. You know, he was a little not quite hip with the ladies at times. So to see him, it was a little bit jarring for me to see Jefferson sort of being Joe Cool here, which he is very much between the costuming, the dancing, sort of the laconic method, way of speaking that he has. How does that jive with you after going back and now seeing this first and then going back and reading some Jefferson biographies? How does the characterization work and how does the characterization differ?
Well, it's interesting because from what I've read, Jefferson was a pretty reserved guy. He was a behind the scenes guy. He was not going to get in an argument one-on-one with someone. And so the way I sort of took the interpretation in the musical was this was sort of the result that Jefferson got by being Jefferson, not necessarily by him doing it himself, but, you know, he would go and fund a newspaper that was going to go and take Hamilton's, horrible governmental ideas down and stuff like that. But it would but this was just sort of a personification of what ended up happening because of Jefferson, not that he directly said those things or did those things, but he funded them or he inspired them. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I mean, part of it was just from a purely dramatic perspective, it was interesting and surprising that that Jefferson is really the main antagonist to Hamilton. It doesn't seem like Burr and it really is Jefferson then causes Burr to finally just snap and they have the duel. But it's like it's almost exactly like the kind of stuff that Jefferson would have done, because Jefferson was a total behind the scenes guy.
Mm-hmm. And clearly in this song, he is the rock star president, or the rock star president to be, I should say. The costuming, the staging of this is so completely out there. And it is probably the most flamboyant character that we have seen, other than perhaps Hercules Mulligan, which in his little Yorktown appearance. So it's interesting that you have the most flamboyant, perhaps, performance from Act One being the most reserved in Act Two. And then you have Thomas Jefferson, who was a more reserved character in real life, being the most flamboyant character in Act Two as well. So it's the brilliance of the writing of this and the characterization of this, I think, can't be. And I'm sure people have said that on every podcast up to date. So we're just going to continue that trend. So you had said, Casey, that this was your favorite song of the cast album. So what works for you to give it that status?
It really sets Jefferson up for the second act absolutely perfectly. I mean, it's true that in real life, Jefferson was probably closer to Burr in terms of personality and the way they worked a room. But here, they want to put him in direct opposition to Hamilton, so they make them both loud and fighty with each other. And so whether or not this was, Jefferson was not the farmer gentleman as much he wanted himself to be. He was still in backroom politics throughout his life. So let's extrapolate that and give him this personality, the one guy whose family money, you know, it bought him everything. He knows he always gets his way. He went to William and Mary. He got appointed to all the right positions. You really want to hate him. But somehow his charm carries him through and you love him anyway. And he's got that swagger. And you just, it's the immense charisma, again, of David Diggs that brings this guy and makes you love him anyway.
I also love that my favorite line in the song was an ad lib.
Yes.
France?
There is certainly a lot of swagger that goes on in this song. And I think that's, in listening to this cast album, you know, Act Two, it's hard to get past Act One. Let's face it. When you're first listening to this, because Act One is so wonderful. And if you know anything historically, you know, things start going downhill in Act Two. There's lots of bad stuff on the horizon, but.
Right. And even if you know the setup of a traditional musical,
yep,
things have to go south.
There's lots of stuff coming, but this is such a jaunty way to herald that doom that you just can't help be charmed by it. In fact, let's talk a little bit about Burr's introduction in this, because he actually sets up the introduction. He introduces Thomas to the audience and does a little recap in the beginning of what has happened to date, and is kind of saying, whoa, let's put the brakes on a little bit, and things aren't going to be all so rosy for Hamilton. He's been done really well for himself. He's had some lucky breaks, but now there's this guy and it's all coming to an end. In the staging of this, and again, I'm just fascinated by this, how did the introduction of Thomas go? Because I know that was very deliberate. After Burr steps off stage, it's a very deliberate way they bring Thomas Jefferson on that I think has a little bit of digs to his status and thoughts and beliefs during the Revolution. So what was that like, Casey?
It was thrilling, obviously. No, I mean, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. David is introduced on a rolling staircase. I'm sorry, what's wrong with me tonight? A rolling staircase attended by all the ensemble members who are, they have gloves on at this point, which is meant to infer that they are the slave population of Monticello. And they are waiting on him hand and foot, and he's acting like the benevolent overseer. And he still is doing all of this with his beautiful, cheesy smile and, you know, acting very friendly, but you know that these are here to serve him.
Mm-hmm. And they're not, it's very blatant. I mean, this
very
is
blatant.
It's very blatant. You know, he's literally being carried on the shoulder. The staircase is being pushed by ensemble members. So he's literally being propelled in on the shoulders.
Yes,
and the backs
they
of
roll
his legs.
Him around as he says, looking at the rolling fields, I can't believe that we are free.
And again, the staging of this, it says so much without actually having to build that into the song. There's a couple other instances. I mean, that we see that contradiction of Jefferson as being the rock star guy, the cool guy, and realistically what he was like as a slave owner, which comes to forefront, I think, in the next song a little bit more. But there's hints of it here because we have Sally Hemings, correct?
Yes,
right.
Be a lamb, darling. Won't you open it?
Yeah, exactly. So what was that like, Michael, in your interpretation of watching that scene? Because it's, you know, she's physically, one of the ensemble members is playing this role.
Yeah, it's a little, it's slightly disconcerting because it's one of those things of where there's definitely a wink there. And, you know, you're kind of not sure if you should be winking. But yeah, it was probably the one part of it where you're like, oh, right, because Madison comes out and you don't – I certainly did not really understand the whole thing of that he's sick and sickly and he's got, you know, sort of a handkerchief and he's kind of holding it in front of his mouth and he's sort of supplicant to Jefferson, you know, just saying, you know, where have you been? What – you know, we need to fix all this stuff. And but it doesn't really play as like a serious problem that you're going to deal with. And then the Sally Hemings – bit, you're just sort of like, oh, yeah, okay, we going to go there? Yeah, I guess we're not going to go there. That's as far as we're going to go on that one. And, mm-hmm. And I guess there's like a whole other cabinet battle about slavery that they cut because mm-hmm. They just – obviously it didn't end in a good place. So dramatically it's – you know, you're gonna put a gun on the mantelpiece that you're not going to shoot. So I don't know. Honestly, I thought that was one kind of odd note in it for me.
Well, I think they treated it as if they did in the real life back then, because it was sort of an undercurrent that everyone sort of discussed, but it never came to the forefront. When Hamilton was being charged and with the Reynolds pamphlet, he knew he wanted to talk about it, but he didn't, much like the slavery question. Everyone just pushed everything under the rug.
Well, I mean, there was that whole Manumission Society thing that that he was a part of. And I mean, I think that's kind of slightly overstating it for some of them, at least, that they were putting it under the rug, of where it kept being something, though, that was never, you know, a top priority, that they were willing to lose certain political battles to win that particular one. But I think it was, you know, in their top five issues or something for some of them. Jefferson, it was not. Jefferson was sort of like, oh, eventually we'll do that, mm-hmm. you know.
And I do think that it's because of the casual way that he treats all of his servants and the way that he treats Sally. I think we get an idea, because otherwise Jefferson does come across as charming and comes across as the rock star. And he's just, you just want to swoon when you see him. But there's enough there. And that's one of those just little casual things. For me, at least, made me just go, he's not as nice as he's coming across. And I think that's necessary to not make him, to not gloss over the faults of his character, because it would be very easy for him to become this amazing superstar, sort of the way that we view Jefferson now. People have such a high opinion of Thomas Jefferson,
right?
To the point where when all of the Sally Hemings stuff was being confirmed, gosh, I don't know how many years ago now, but I do remember it, when the DNA testing was done, there was a lot of pushback to say, oh, this certainly couldn't possibly be. So I think it was a necessary way of doing it while not taking away from the charisma of the character, but letting us know as an audience that, yeah, just remember, like, there was still some shady stuff going on here.
Well, it's also, they weren't his servants. They were his slaves.
His slaves, right. So. And look what I did. I defaulted to that. They were his slaves. He owned them.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that was, you know, like one of you said, he came from money. He came from sort of the landed gentry kind of thing. This was his, this was the world that he grew up in, and which is very different than, you know, Hamilton, who that is not where he came from. And so there was a normalcy, a normalness to this whole lifestyle that he had, of where he was like, what? You know, well, of course I should be doing all these things I'm doing, and all these other people, they should be doing what they're doing. And so I don't think those were things that were top of mind.
Right. And I think it's a good reminder that the musical always touches on, for the most part, that these were all men with faults.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hamilton is
right.
Obviously our Disney hero of this, so he gets the best gloss. But everyone had the skeletons. I think out of everyone in the show, Washington probably gets away with the most, because we don't really touch on his slavery issues at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And he has the infamous not yet line.
Right.
He makes a very, and I think it's interesting, and I think it's really important that line is in there as well, because it does remind you that as much as these were real people who did amazing, amazing things, there was a lot of things that they did not make them good men. And we needed reminding of that without taking away from some of the wonderful things that they did do. So
Right. It's
good. So what was – if looking at the song as a whole and its place in the show, what is it for you that makes it the most compelling?
I don't know. I think it's such a wonderful Act Two opener, because it is sort of the palette refresher and shift from the revolutionary fervor of Act One, which is so hard to top. I mean, after Yorktown and Nonstop, you're like, oh, where do we go from here? You're on this buzz. And then they're like, hey, how about this guy?
With his long purple coat.
Like, oh my God, I'm ready for act two now. Let's bring it in. But it also really does signify that we're going to a completely different new place in act two. And David.
And David.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was part of it for me, was because I really liked Lafayette. In, you know, talking just purely about the characters, I really liked Lafayette live in a way that, even though I liked him on the recording, I just was like, wow, this is so much better than I had in my head. And then when Diggs comes out as Jefferson, and it's essentially the same level of energy, but in a completely different way. It really resets your expectations in terms of, you're like, all right, this is good. This is as good as I was hoping it would be. It's actually a little better than I thought it would be. And then this number is like, oh, there's a whole other level of spectacle that we're in store for here. And I thought it was great. I mean, I thought it really set up the second act in a beautiful way, and the rest of the second act delivered. Mm-hmm. So you could have easily had this be this amazing, amazing number and then have it kind of lull for a while until something later on, but it really didn't.
Yeah, I think for me what worked is just the sass of it all, because you're paired up against a hero who is just has sass to spare. He is a walking bag of sass. So you set up a protagonist that is going to be worthy of him. Now, we think that Burr is the protagonist through all of this, but
antagonist.
Antagonist. Thank you. You would think that in looking at this, that the Burr is the antagonist. But realistically, I mean, it's Washington or I'm tripping over my presidents and my dead white people today. It's actually Jefferson, as you had said earlier, Michael, that pushes, that tips everything over to the point where Burr just can't take it anymore. So to have a character come in who has the same presence, that same larger than lifeness to them as Hamilton, is really important. And it gives you a sense of expectations, like this is going to be really good. And even though you know hard times are ahead, it's at least going to be entertaining. So I really appreciated that. Now, Michael, you had talked about the presence of Davy Diggs and switching from the character of Lafayette to Jefferson. And as we're recording this on July 13th, it was just announced that Davy Diggs is leaving the role in 2 days and will be played. It will be recast, but will be played by understudies in the interim until that's done. And I'm interested to hear what you both have to think, since you have seen his performance, in first, what Davy Diggs as an actor specifically brought to this role, and how difficult do you think it will be to find someone to bring that same level of energy or that same presence to this? Because it's a pretty big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, as I live in Oakland, and Davy Diggs is famously from Oakland as well, and my understanding is, you know, he's a musician, he's a rapper, and a certain level of notoriety. But this is his first first theatrical, certainly musical theater kind of thing. And I'm frankly a little surprised, I guess, that he's leaving so soon, because I think he'd want to sort of take advantage of this a little bit longer. But I'm sure all of these people have so many things that are being dangled in front of them in terms of opportunities. So I'm sure I hope they all do sort of the appropriate level of next interesting thing. But they're going to have a hard time, because, again, my understanding of this is that, you know, I mean, I have some of his music and it is extraordinarily fast. And so that is not and again, my understanding was that a lot of this part was sort of written because Miranda knew that Diggs could perform at that speed. And I don't know enough about contemporary hip hop artists to know if that is just a capability that many people have, or if it's as rare as I might think it is. And so I think it's going to be really hard to fill his shoes. Very hard, because again, it's not even just sort of the craft level of facility with the speed of singing and saying this stuff, but just the sheer physical charisma of it. Because he's also got this really interesting thing going on, because Lafayette, you know, is this Frenchman over in America fighting for freedom, both for France but also for America, and then Jefferson nominally is sort of on the same side there. And, you know, and if you know the history of this stuff, he becomes essentially a French apologist as all sorts of horrible things start happening in the French Revolution. I don't know. It's a super challenging, any, even one of those parts would be super challenging. And so for them to have found a single actor who could play both of them so well, I think it's really hard.
How about you, Casey?
I will respectfully disagree.
Oh, good. I love when people disagree on podcasts. It's my favorite thing.
I mean, yes, you need to find someone with this intense personality who can really carry it through both roles. But I know that Andrew Chappelle has been doing it, and I've seen him both play Madison Mulligan and Lawrence Phillip, and he's done one in each show I've seen. And I think that dude has got the skills to carry it through. He's super talented on his own. And I think that they're going to be able to find someone who can at least carry on the legacy. Mm-hmm. I mean, like they say, Lafayette's a smart man, he'll be fine. It's going to be fine. The material is there. They can find somebody to work with it. And I mean, no one's going to be David, but no one's going to be Chris Jackson either. And Javier is not Lynn. And the material is fast, but it's not even the fastest thing that David can do. So I can do it. I've watched a 10-year-old do it. Like, people can do it. People can bring it. I have faith.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a problem in the musicality of it, because I do remember reading an article where David was laughing and saying that's not really that fast for rap, for hip hop. It's fast for Broadway, but it's right, not fast in hip hop.
He's the fastest rapper on Broadway, which is not saying too much.
This is true. I think it's more of a charisma thing. I think that is going to probably be the most difficult thing. And I think it's the most difficult thing for any actor stepping into a role that is so incredibly tied up with one person. I think it's going to be, you know, people are used to Javier stepping in for Lynn at this point. And there's a little bit of presence there. But I think any actor who puts their stamp on a role, it's to have another to come in, and you don't want to be the next David Diggs. You want to be the next you, and you want to put your stamp on the role. And I think that's going to be, it's going to be a challenging thing for anybody just to come in and say, how do I interpret this and make it mine, when it's become so incredibly iconic? So I'm incredibly excited to see what the next person does, because it's such an interesting role. But a little part of me weeps that I did not get a chance to see David.
Yes.
I'm hoping the recording comes out of the vault someday.
It will. It has to, right?
Right. It does.
No, it's very bittersweet. You love what they brought to the role, but you really want to look forward to this continuing for years and years and centuries.
Until it ends up on the local high school stage.
Hey, if I were in high school, I want to be the one playing Lafayette Jefferson.
That's right.
Well, supposedly it's going to get released to high schools much sooner than you would expect.
And, you know, it's interesting to think about that, because there's not traditionally more girls than guys try out for theater at the high school level. So you're going to have to be doing some gender flipping roles. And I think if there's ever a musical where you could gender flip, this would be it.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Flip those roles so quickly, because you've already broken so many norms. Let's just keep shattering them. So that's pretty cool. All right. So why don't we wrap this up with any final thoughts we have about What Did I Miss? Is there anything that we didn't touch upon or cover that is something that you really want to get out there about this song?
Well, I will say that if you have not yet seen David in the role, and you have not yet been on Tumblr to see all the little pieces they have, I can't say the name because there's a swear word in the Tumblr title, but just Google the bounciest Jefferson. and you will find some little clips of him in this role, and it will make your day for life.
I guess the thing I would say is the costume is so amazing live that I really appreciated the because I think the idea with Hamilton's is he's green because he's money, he's the treasury. And so I think of Jefferson's is he's basically sort of this royal kind of magenta, like he's royalty.
He's Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's it. But anyway, I thought the costumes were amazing.
Yeah, I am with you there, Michael. I immediately flash back to like Morris Day in the Time, you know, with the cape and the Prince-esque. You know, it's very Minneapolis in a certain
and the
point
cane,
in the 80s.
For sure.
And the cane, yeah, definitely. It sets. It does what costuming does best, and it sets a tone without saying a word. It gives you a distinct impression. So it's all, I adore this song. It's one of the ones that's more on constant rotation than others, just because it is catchy and it's bouncy, and it always makes me happy when it comes on, because it is, even though it's the portent of gloom and doom, it's pretty darn upbeat and swingy. So, well, I think that's it for this week's Pod for Ham. Michael and Casey, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me.
This has been fantastic.
All right. And this is Deb Stanish. And don't forget to turn in for the next episode of Pod for Ham, discussing the brilliant Cabinet Battle One. Thanks for listening.
Mr. Jefferson, welcome home.
Mr. Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton.